Welcome to episode 223 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Ron Seaver about the history of the National Sports Forum and what to expect in Las Vegas next month.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who knows there's no off-season in sports business, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callinan, and you are listening to Sports Geek. Welcome back for 2019. And just as there is no off-season in sports, there definitely has been no off-season at Sports Geek, that's for sure. More to come about what I've been up to since you last listened to an episode. Hopefully you enjoyed the Sports Geek replay series with some of the popular episodes from 2018. But we are back for 2019. And my first guest for 2019 is Ron Seaver from the National Sports Forum, which will be held in Las Vegas, Feb 10 to 12. You can check it out, sports-forum.com. We chat about what to expect and also the history of how the conference has evolved over time. So this is my chat with Ron Seaver from the National Sports Forum. Very happy to welcome Ron Seaver, president of the National Sports Forum, to the podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Ron.
Hey, thank you, Sean. Really pleasure to be here.
Before we get started into National Sports Forum, how did you get your start in sport?
Oh, great question, actually. And I hate to give away my age, but I'm very old now. And I actually started in sports after I got out of school, after I got out of college. I was one of those guys that had like eight jobs his first 5 years out of college. Not really sure. I was doing a little of everything. And I'm from New Hampshire, and I was migrating my way out west. Eventually wound up here in San Diego. And I just decided on a lark, a conversation that I overheard somebody else talking about, where a lady was telling another lady she's going to work for the San Diego Padres. And all of a sudden, it was like bells went off in my head. Oh, my God, I absolutely love baseball. God, go to work for the San Diego Padres. So not knowing how to go about it, I just picked up the phone and called and proceeded to have verbal diarrhea all over this poor woman who answered the phone. I was not going to give her, you know, I didn't want her to hang up. And she started eventually laughing as I'm, you know, basically just rambling. And she said, well, you know, where do you want to go? And I was like, not understanding. I said, you mean I get a choice? And she's like, no, we need to know what department to send you to. And I'm like, you guys have departments? And she's like, yeah, we're like a real business down here.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, she probably howled after she was done. And I said, God, I don't know. I mean, I'll wash the uniforms, mow the lawn. What do you need? She just starts laughing. She goes, no, I know where to send you. The next thing I know, I'm talking to the VP of ticket sales. And as luck would have it, I wound up getting a job working in the boiler room, which was then called the boiler room, but the call center for the San Diego Padres. And this is back in, God, I hate to say it, but 1983.
Yeah.
1983. I will tell you this, Sean, something very few people know about me. I was traded at the end of my first day. I got traded. That's how they told me. They said, yep. Ron, listen, we hope you enjoyed your time here. We just want to let you know that we've traded you. Now, I know first basemen and outfielders can get traded, but I didn't know, you know, guys that work the phones could get traded. So I was very curious. I was like, wait a minute, I like San Diego. I'm going to wake up and find myself in, I don't know, Toronto or Cleveland. And I'm like, what do you mean you traded me? And they said, well, we traded you to the San Diego State Aztecs, their football team. You traded me? And they said, yes. And I said, so I'm just curious, what did you guys get? Oh, we got absolutely nothing. So I pause and I go, wow, that sounds like a great trade. But sure enough, after my second day, I was working for the San Diego State Aztecs, trying to sell tickets over the phone for a team that had 2 years in a row had finished like 2-9.
Yeah.
Very difficult to do, working on straight commission, no salary, and trying my best to, you know, call people at the middle of dinner, you know, to really annoy them. and try to convince them to come and become season ticket holders of the Aztecs. And I wasn't, believe me, I didn't set any records, that's for sure. But they loved the way I worked. At the end of the year, come October, the Padres scooped me back. I finished 83 selling tickets for the San Diego Padres leading into 84. And when a job opened up in the promotions department, I jumped on it. I knew that ticket sales, I just wasn't that good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, I think I was really bad at it. But I really hustled. I really tried. I just didn't have a natural knack for working the phones like that. So, but I thought promotions might be better, and I was right. I started by – and you know, the fortunate part, John, is after all of these years, I'm now in my mid-20s, and now I finally had my first job where I had a mentor. The person – I was so lucky I got a chance to go to work for a gentleman by the name of Andy Strasburg. And Andy, lifetime Padres executive, ran the sponsorship and marketing and promotions department. And I got a job working for him, and that changed my life.
I mean, it's very – I mean, I'm always interested in that background story for people getting into sports, because there's always a lot of enthusiasm to get in. But like you said, you don't really, when you're first coming into the business, you don't know that there are all these different departments. A lot of people start in sales and on the phones, and some people excel at it and become, that's their thing. But then once you're in an organization, you can start seeing all the different opportunities and sort of find where your skill set best fits. Is that where you thought the promotion sponsorship space was something that really fit for you?
It did, John. I mean, I was much, much better at sponsorship sales. And sponsorship sales is a different, very different kind of sale than a ticket sale. A ticket sale is very transactional. It's a numbers game. You are smiling and dialing, and you're just really getting after it. You don't really spend time getting to know people, trying to solve problems, things of that nature, at least not when I was doing it. They just told you, you know, make 100 phone calls by lunchtime.
Yep.
So if you're going to do that, you're not going to spend a lot of time getting to know people. And I was a lot better building relationships. It's kind of leads into what I'm doing now, but yep, a little bit better at building those bonds, if you would, than necessarily just calling a million people and trying to convince them not to hang up on me. So I was definitely better at sponsorship. I got involved in that starting in 1984, and that really became the focus of my career moving forward.
So from the Padres, how did you go from working the Padres in the promotion sponsorship space to the early days in the early days of National Sports Forum? How did that come about?
Yeah, I stayed with the Padres through the end of 1990. So I have several years with the Padres doing this left to go on the agency side. Interestingly enough, Sean, I tell people now, I said, if I had to do over again, I probably would have been a lot better as a sponsorship salesperson. I had a fair amount of success doing it, but I would have been even better if I'd spent 3 years on the agency side before I tried to sell sponsorship, because I would have had a better appreciation for client on the other side is doing.
Understanding what the brands want, and you're not just seeing them as another number in your call list.
Right. And I'm just trying to get opening night fireworks sponsored.
Yeah.
So whatever it is that you need, we want you to do the opening night fireworks.
Yeah.
And I would have been a lot more effective at it had I done that. But now, as it worked out, I left the Padres and went on the agency side for just about 3 years, working with clients such as Upper Deck, Hunt Wesson Foods, Ralston Purina, Gillette, Evian, True Value Hardware Stores, a number of different clients. And that was great experience for me, great opportunity. And it also kind of led into, I'd had this idea, which kind of leads to the National Sports Forum. Now, for the first time, I'm not just dealing with Major League Baseball, but I'm dealing with other sports. And the people who do my job, who do my job that I used to do at the Padres, that are now working with the NFL, they could be working in golf. And you realize, first and foremost, how similar the same problems. I mean, you tend to think that when you're in your silo, we're baseball and we have our own unique set of, you know, never the twain shall meet.
Yeah.
So baseball stays in baseball, football stays in football, and so forth. But as I started going the agency side, now talking on behalf of my clients with different people, you started to realize that yeah, the ball was different, but their needs were very much the same. And, you know, their stories were very similar. And the other thing was they were really great people.
Yeah,
it's a really nice niche of people that if you start to get to know them, you know, the thought occurred that at this particular point, now this is the early 90s, you know, I'm starting to think that I never would have met the people from the NBA. I never would have met these people from the NHL if I hadn't been on the agency side, because being in Major League Baseball, the only people I'd get really to meet and go to conferences with were other people from Major League Baseball. So I started to think, you know, minor league baseball events, these are all cool people. It's a shame we never get to share ideas, because honestly, they're trying to do the exact same thing I am. They're trying to sell tickets, trying to get their sponsors engaged, trying to keep their fans active. I mean, they're trying to do the same things I'm trying to do. I bet they've got some interesting ideas.
Yeah, there's definitely a similarity in, you know, what all the different teams, both in different sports, but then also globally, are trying to do. Because in the end, the fan is still, you know, a human being on the other side that has passion for that team, has the same needs to want to go to a game or wants to, you know, follow it and follow the sport. So, yeah, there's lots of similarities, and you're right. When you're in your sport, you can just be very much consumed by your sport. Whether it be the local rivalries or what other teams are doing in your league, when there's some real advantages to be able to pull your head up and look at what other teams are doing, what other leagues are doing, what are they doing in other regions, because there's opportunities there that how could you do it yourself?
Well, and it's funny because really the essence of the forum was, you know, I'd love to have gone as somebody at the Padres. I loved going to other ball clubs and spending a couple of days at the Seattle Mariners and just following them around, or the Phillies. And so the reality of it was, as that natural, you know, student that wants to get better, it's a shame that we don't get to share information and best practices. Somebody ought to start a meeting and just invite all the guys together. Let's see if we can build a wall, if you would, build an area, build a Congress where it's just, you know, nobody cares what sport you're with. Come on in, grab a beer, sit down, talk to us about what you're doing, what's working, what's not working. Let's help each other out. Not just here, but now we've made, you know, contacts and friends that this can go on. So 2 months from now, 3 months from now, I'm struggling with a season ticket issue. And I know that, wait a minute, the Baltimore Ravens were talking about this. Let me call Kevin Rocklitz over at the Ravens. I bet he can tell me what I need to do. That would never have happened when I was during my tenure with MLB. But because we started the forum, you know, you now have an area where you have so many different people, a resource that you can reach out to. You get to meet so many different people from different walks of life that you never would have met anywhere else.
So what was the first year of National Sports Forum like? Where was it? Who was attending?
Well, all right. I got to tell you the story because you'll appreciate it.
Yeah.
It tells you just how dumb I am, but honestly, so I had this idea. I'm going to start this conference. I'm going to invite all these, you know, executives from what we call our four pillars: ticket sales, sponsorship, business development, and marketing.
Yep.
And basically the revenue generating people. I'm going to invite all those executives together. They're all going to come in because they're all going to think like I do that this is a great idea. But before I do this, let me bounce this off a few people. Just wanted to see if it was, you know, I mean, am I crazy here?
Yeah.
And literally what people told me was I was crazy. I remember my boss, my mentor at the Padres, I'm sitting down explaining all this to him, and we're going to invite all these people out from NASCAR and, you know, WWE. This is going to be absolutely terrific. And he waited until I was done, and he said, "Are you serious about this?" And I go, "Yeah, what do you think?" He paused for a second, and he thought, "Well, you know, I've known you for most of your professional career." "Yes, sir." He goes, "In all that time, you've come up with some incredibly stupid ideas." And I was like, "What?" He goes, no, "but honestly, this is the dumbest idea you've ever come up with." So I was not expecting that answer, Sean. And I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "You don't understand. You know, baseball and basketball, they're two different worlds. They'll never come together. Football is never going to come together with hockey. You are going to waste all of your money. You're going to become a laughingstock in the industry."
Yeah.
Well, I'm like one of those teenage kids. If you want me to do something, tell me I can't do it.
Yep.
Oh, you can't do this. It's like, you bet I can. I'll show you. So I go running off to go start this thing. And, you know, and this was before the internet was big and fax machines were pretty much, you know, cutting edge. And so it shows you the time period. It's 1994. And I'm going to launch this thing. It's going to be in the middle of March of 1995. And this thing's going to be huge. Well, I went out and got 10 really, I felt, good speakers, Sean, to speak at this event. It was the president of the Golden State Warriors, president of the Jersey Nets at that time, head sponsorship guy at Coke, head sponsorship guy at Coors. I mean, I got, you know, the president of the Anaheim Angels and the Ducks to come speak, the owner of the Rockies. I got 10 really good speakers, put the word out, spent thousands of dollars mailing out brochures and letters and sending out faxes, and we only had 3 people that signed up to come.
Okay.
We were going to do it in the middle of March in Colorado Springs. Now, people have asked me since, Colorado Springs, why?
Yep.
And the only good answer – I'd never been there before. Okay. And the only really good answer I could give, I guess, was that it was equally inconvenient for everybody to get there. And so it's like – but
it's a nice part of the world. I like Colorado Springs.
It's gorgeous, but it's not on the main track for really too many people if you're out of Boston or New York. And they're not, you know, for some event they've never heard of before. So I probably did not help myself by doing this that first year in Colorado Springs, but beautiful place. And I wound up owing – I remember I wound up owing the hotel $65,000. You know, and I'm like, but guys, I really tried. And they're like, they listened to my sob story when I got all done. They said, wow, we know how hard you worked on this, but we have one question. Is that going to be cash or charge? And so I'm trying to think of, I don't have $65,000. I have no idea how I'm going to pay these guys off. So I just shot a deal. I said, guys, here's what I propose we do. If you give me some grace here, I will pay you $5,000 a quarter until we get this paid off. Still not knowing how I'm going to come up with that money, but $5,000 a quarter until we get it paid off. And if you agree to do that, I'll bring this back and hold it here next year. Well, I think it was all the guy could do to laugh, you know, not to laugh in my face. And he said, look, I see a lot of events and listen, I appreciate the offer, but 3 people is not a mandate. And you're just going to turn $65,000 into $165,000, but it's up to you if that's what you want to do. So I said, guys, I can't pay you. I mean, I just that's the most fair way I could think to work this out. So they agreed, and we go forward. And so the next year, now it's 1996.
Yep.
But now I've got a year to work on this, and we put together a steering committee to help us of guys that did think this was a good idea, and we went forward. And so actually the very first forum was launched in 1996, and we did it in January, and it was in Colorado Springs. And we had 32 people that attended. We still lost a ton of money doing it. In fact, we lost money putting this on for 7 years. Which I think people – I just didn't know. I mean, how long are you supposed to lose money on these things? I didn't know. I'd never done it before. It certainly turned out to be a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, and I learned a ton. But it became very much a labor of love for us. I mean, from 32, you know, the next year we went to Denver. The year after that, we went to Boston. So we started building what we have now of moving it from one city to another, crisscrossing, if you would, going profiling major sports cities with great stories to tell across the country. So we are now about 3 weeks away from what will be our 24th annual forum. This year, we've never been to Las Vegas before. This year, we're going to Las Vegas, and people ask, why did it take so long? And it's like, well, it was only until a couple of years ago that, you know, the NHL launched a franchise, the Golden Knights. So they had teams for us to be able to meet up with. The Raiders are obviously relocating to Las Vegas. Las Vegas becoming very much on the map. And so we approached Las Vegas about doing the forum there and put it together at the MGM Grand. And so that's what we're getting ready for today.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas is very much front and center from the sports business world in the US right now. I mean, obviously the Knights have been a big success story, and they've got the bright, shiny new T-Mobile Arena, which has got all the latest bells and whistles. But then you've also got the sports betting, and that is sort of a big change in US sports. Do you think that's going to be a big topic of conversation at NSF this year?
It is. I mean, we didn't talk about it at all last year. And of course, everything changed with the Supreme Court decision this past spring. And now very much it's on the front burner. And I think it'll become an even bigger topic, certainly as more states approve and ratify and start having sports gaming in their particular states. Because a lot of our team execs are looking at it going, all right, we're not really sure, you know, what to do, what our options are, what's happening out there. So we're very pleased. I know we'll be having a couple of breakout sessions dedicated to discussing sports gaming. The Las Vegas Lights, which is a United Soccer League, USL team. I know Steve Pastorino is coming out to do a session on the program that they've actually put in place. They were, if not the first, then at least they were one of the first sports teams to put together a program, a viable program with an outside gambling source, in this case, William Hill.
Yep.
And they put that together. So I think they're trying to actually bring William Hill in with them to talk about, here's what we're doing and how we're doing it. And they're having a lot of fun with it. It's been a very much a positive experience. And I think it's the kind of thing that people look for at the forum, going to places of case studies so I can sit here and listen. So what are you doing? How did it work? What was good? What was bad? What would you change? Are you bringing it back? You know, what are the pitfalls to look out for, et cetera? We're very pleased to have Steve coming out and talking about, hey, here's what we're doing. And I think as the forum continues on, obviously, this will become a bigger topic. I know that one of the biggest players, if you would, in that category is MGM Grand.
Yep.
And so we're very, very delighted that Scott Butera, who is the president of MGM's Interactive, so the gaming arm, he's on a super panel that we're doing on that Monday, talking about obviously what MGM, what the future looks like for them, what they're doing. So you're going to start to see more of that issue becoming a very, very relevant topic as we move forward here with the forum.
Especially, you know, you've just seen MGM sign the deal with the NFL. There's a lot of exploration in how do teams and leagues partner with sports betting agencies and gambling operators. One of the conversations I've had with a lot of the, you know, my friends in the North American market as this has been looming, I've been saying, you know, look at other markets. Here in Australia, we've had sports gambling available for ages. It's sort of a national pastime over here. But it also becomes, there's all these opportunities of a team can have a partner and those kind of things. So, showing my friends, you know, my Facebook feed with Australian sports teams in there and seeing, you know, gambling partners on jerseys or partnerships and those kind of things. So I think there is a lot of opportunity in this space. Knowing that I've worked with operators like William Hill, they're obviously rubbing their hands together at the opportunity. So I think it's going to be really interesting at how it evolves over the next 18 months. How the partnerships evolve? Are they the database partnerships that the NBA's already done in licensing their feeds and things like that? Or are they going to be these club-based customer acquisition sort of plays where partners want to partner with the team to get people to sign up and those kind of things? And then the live betting and the in-game betting and looking at what I think the Wizards did the broadcast recently with having people polling during the game. So I think there's a lot of, you know, I think the broadcasters will be all over it. Obviously, with everyone at NSF being revenue focused, there's this effectively new party at the table walking in with big bags of cash. It's going to be interesting to see how those deals break out.
Well, and taking this one step further, Sean, I mean, this is one of those perfect examples where even if you have a league deal, you're still going to want to follow up, I think, with strategic team deals. The teams will honor, obviously, the league's overarching sponsorship of XYZ company, and they'll make sure that they, if they're an advertiser of the All-Star game or something of that nature, the crown jewels, they'll take care of that. But how are you getting day to day and really in person with a given market, without being a sponsor of that team? You really want to do both.
Yeah.
And so I think, what you're seeing is some of the teams, and again, primarily, obviously, in states where gambling is allowed, sports gaming is allowed, you're starting to see that they have not just one partner, but perhaps multiple partners. You know, they're not doing exclusives. They're working with a number of different entities in that industry, and each one offering a different, maybe a different service or a different experience, a different program, which I think is going to be very, very interesting to see how this continues to grow.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it changes the way that clubs interact, but then also the in-stadium experience and those kind of things. Again, knowing that, if I'm at the MCG, I can walk down and get a beer, but I can also go to a betting terminal and make a bet on the game, in the game. Those kind of opportunities in stadium or, betting providers, locking down stadiums as a provider inside the stadium and those kind of things. They're some of those opportunities that are going to open up over the next couple of years.
The ripple effect of television ratings being enhanced, as well as people coming out to see. I mean, there's nothing better than having $10 on the game, or, depending on who you are, $1,000 on the game. But even if it's just, how much betting goes on, good natured betting between fans at games or something like that on the Super Bowl, whether who wins the coin flip or any of those, things that we do now.
Yep.
Only now you're going to be able to, you don't have to reach across the aisle. You can just go up, or you can go on your phone and place it. And even a game that's not necessarily close, it's 5-0 at halftime of a soccer game, you're still going to want to hang around because you have a bet on who's going to get a red card in the second half or who's going to get the first goal in the second half. I mean, those kind of things, you're going to stay. So it's one of those things I think that may even help us with our, in-venue attendance.
Yeah. And I think there will be, seeing some of the trends that have happened here in Australia around betting advertising and advertising in-game, advertising at the stadium, it probably peaked a couple of years ago where someone would be lining up for goal and they would be telling the live odds and things like that. And so then there's been pushback publicly to dial that back a little bit, that children are being getting a lot of messaging around gambling too early. So it's sort of they pushed the limit as far as they could, and now we're starting to see some of those lines being drawn to say this is enough, this is how much the public can sustain, and how much the public wants. So I think you'll probably see in the US market some of that, some of those pushing and balances and finding out where that right line is, effectively on how much is too much and what works for the fans as well as the teams and leagues.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And it's going to be very interesting. Like I said, I mentioned earlier when we had kind of a sparse start, and now we're anticipating 1,000, 1,100 people, over 150, ball clubs and sports properties there. Because a lot of times we are talking about stick and ball, but also, what about auto racing? What about golf? What about horse racing? Other avenues that you're going to be able to look at now. The ability to now come to the forum, whether you're an organization trying to figure out what could we do and getting information, or perhaps you're a platform like an MGM that is on the other side going, where can I go where I can access so many teams under one roof for 3 days?
Yep.
And find yourself sitting at a table with, seven teams from seven different sports. You're not allowed to go to the league meetings unless you're a league sponsor, which costs many millions of dollars. So where else can you go where you can really share that kind of information and get a chance to get to know these people from so many different organizations? So we're anxious to see where this thing plays out.
And you talked about the pillars, especially being revenue driven. Is that where the makeup of the attendees are coming from the marketing and ticket sales, business development space?
It's funny now because we're getting so much bigger. You know, there's other offshoot departments, but they all basically at the end of the day wind up within what we call the four pillars. So, for example, you could be in esports.
Yep.
Another up and coming topic here in the U.S. The teams are now looking, either getting involved or looking to get involved, or they are involved in trying to figure out how to enhance it. Sponsors are interested from their perspective. It's like, well, what more could we be doing to connect up with the millions of people playing these games? But esports, non-traditional revenue, is a new category that we started a workshop and breakout sessions around a couple of years ago. Because once again, these stadiums and arenas are getting so expensive that the mandate is, hey, when the season's over, you don't just turn the lights off and go away.
Yep.
What else could we be doing in this facility to generate revenue for the organization? We still have debt service to pay, things of that nature. And so once again, the power of the group.
Yep.
Bringing everyone together so that the Eagles can talk about what they're doing, or the Bears can talk about what they're doing, and people can share this information with one another. And you come away with like, "Oh, we're not doing that. So how does that work?" You know, type of answers. So again, it's not one of the four pillars, but it is within the four pillars. You know, social and digital media, things of that nature, inside sales. So we have other avenues, but they all, when you look at it, we don't get into player. I mean, sometimes people ask, you know, so are the scouting departments there? No,
yep.
We don't really get into the player side of the transaction. We don't get into the accounting or legal. In many ways, services, we don't necessarily get into the licensing.
Yep.
Because every league has their own deal. But when you have such things, group sales, season tickets, single game seats, available, and so many people have this, or you're an event and you have one or two big events a year, how do you keep it alive during the quote-unquote off season in between the major events? This is really our sweet spot, talking about how to keep connected to the fans, how to keep our sponsors engaged, you know, because the sponsors are very much looking for that too. I mean, they know that you're in that community. In Las Vegas, for example, we'll use Las Vegas since they're the host. You know, the Knights have a lot of people that love the Knights.
Yep.
How could we as a sponsor play off of that to ingratiate ourselves and really be part of the family, be part of the loyalty factor, if you would, by being engaged with the Knights? What could we be doing, and how do we keep that going even during the off season?
Yeah, very much interested myself from a personal point of view from the esports side of things. My League of Legends team debuts on this coming Friday as we're recording now. So very much, you know, I've gone through the last 2 months in setting the team up and getting it ready. And yeah, definitely it has been a terrific learning experience in pretty much educating brands on what esports is and what the opportunity is. But there's definitely opportunities for sports to apply a lot of the processes that we already know around sponsorship and connecting fans in that esports space. So yeah, I'm looking forward to swapping some ideas with some people around that in the North American market.
No, I know you'll be joining us this year. I know. And in fact, if I can tee you up, we have 32 different breakout sessions over Monday and Tuesday, and you're going to be leading one of them. Could I get you to talk a little bit about your session?
Yeah, definitely. So what I'm going to do is the Digital to Dollars workshop in a very fast format. It's usually something that's run over 2 days, but I've got a super fast 1 hour version of it that goes through the process that we're actually using with teams and leagues around how do they monetize their digital and social specifically, looking at their audiences. So it's got five pillars: know your audience, know your content, so the content you're producing around your team, to be able to pitch that back to your sponsors. And then know your distribution. So that's diving in on all the different opportunities that social media offers and helping you understand what the value is of all of those different assets. And what we've found, and this is where the process has sort of been built out of, is that teams are still struggling with what is that rate card? What should we be putting value on for a social media post, whether it be Facebook or Twitter or something on Snapchat or something in their Instagram story? So helping the teams or leagues build out their rate card, so then you can go to your sponsorship and sales and business development people and say, here's our playbook. Here's the content we're producing. Here's the audiences we're engaging with. Here's the platforms that are working. So it gives them effectively like Lego style. They can pull the pieces together to build out those pitches, to talk about what you did earlier, to talk to those brands and actually deliver them both engaging content on the platforms that reach their audience, but then also develop those campaigns, which I think is still relatively underutilized in the sports space. And I think there's a real opportunity to grow revenue in that space. Yes, you can put your logos on your jerseys, in your arena, do some branded content, but if then you're also driving a campaign that delivers high-quality contacts and data and engagement for a brand, that's what they're looking for. And so I think that's where there's upside in what they're delivering. So it's going to be a fast-paced session where we'll be pushing around the room and getting everyone sharing some of those ideas. And the good thing about it, running that session, there's a lot of those ideas start bouncing around the room. And so I like to use the phrase steal with pride. And like you said before, if one of the teams is doing something, you're like, how can I put our twist on it? You know, so for my team, my esports team, Gravitas, like I'll be listening very intently for my whole time at NSF and in the sessions. And if someone says, oh, we're doing this cool content idea with this and it's working with our players, I'll be able to do a Gravitas version of that quite easily with my players on my platforms, use my rate card and then go back to a sponsor. And so my goal for that session is that everyone walks away with an idea from a content point of view, with some ideas around how they can better activate some of those channels, but the starting point of a structure to go, oh, I can pull that deal together and here it is. It's a one-page deal. The sponsor can understand it. My content team can understand it. My sales team knows how to sell it and start breaking down some of those silos. Because I constantly am working in team land, sometimes as a digital divorce counselor, working between the digital teams and the sponsorship teams. If we can get that working, then that deal flow and that money can start coming in from a digital point of view. Because it's my goal that the digital is going to be the number one driver for revenue in sports by 2030. And so I think this is the way it can happen. So that's the session I'm looking to run and really looking to see and engage the NSF attendees and really getting them involved.
And that's a great topic. And to your point of how it's growing exponentially and will continue to grow, because it not only works from the team and sports property end of things, because it does so engage their fans. I mean, if you're a fan, you're a fan. You can't get enough, you know, videos, interviews, chalk talks, coaches, corners, you know, more of that, the better. And you know who else agrees with that is the sponsors. So, you know, sponsors, you know, 5 years ago, you know, they were saying, hey, it'd be nice if there was something social you could throw away. That'd be great. Now they mandate it.
Yeah.
You know, social, that's, you know, in the old days, the first thing they were looking for was television. We want television spots. We want radio spots. Not anymore. Now it's like, well, what are you going to be doing socially that we can integrate with?
It's also it's not only mandated, but it's also required in the tweaks that have been made in the social platforms. Big brands are really struggling in getting reach and engagement with their customers because they're not fans. They're customers or, you know, they're potential prospects, whereas sports still have this really highly engaged fan base that want to connect. And so that's the opportunity to be able to say, well, we're going to produce great content. It might be on our channels. It could be on your channel, but we know we can be getting that engagement because our fans love it. And, you know, I know I talk to a lot of people that potentially say they want to leave sport and they want to go and work at a bank or somewhere because they might get paid more. But I always give them the cautionary tale. It's a lot tougher to be running the social and digital channels for a big brand than it is for a sports team, because you can't just throw up an alley-oop dunk or Steph Curry hitting four threes in a row and boom, you get that engagement. It's really hard work for a brand marketer out there. And that's the piece that we need to get the content digital folk in sports team land to understand how high value they've got, and help translate that for the sponsorship guys that have to do the sales talk. So that's one of the key pieces of getting that sales message out.
Well, to your point there, Sean, I mean, again, because the corporates know that if they just post, you know, social media up there, people are just turning a blind eye to it. But that's what makes their sports engagements and their relationships with their teams, their sponsorships, that much more valuable. Help us to do it. They don't necessarily care about my bank, yep, per se, just because it's a bank, but they love the fact that we're, you know, the sponsor of Steph's kids.
Yep.
And you know, this is how you can get involved, and this is how you can come in and be a part of it. And it really humanizes the big blue, you know, corporation out there. And it really brings it into the very much the grassroots and local level when they can tie in with their minor league team or their major league team or the coming event that's coming to town, and be a part of the golf tournament or something of that nature that really makes them human and less corporate.
So just before we wrap up, do you have any advice for people like myself that might be a first-time attendee to NSF? What would be your advice to someone who is either going to NSF for the first time or considering going to NSF? What would your advice be?
Well, we try to. I mean, there's plenty of sports conferences out there, but I think one of the things that makes the forum so different is the fact that you have so many sports properties together. And so for somebody that's coming for the first time is to be, you know, we take advantage of everything. We have a newcomer's breakfast on Monday morning. Right off the bat, you're going to sit at a table with a steering committee member and meet eight other people from different sports, and you start to build your network. The number one thing, I mean, we try to have a lot of emphasis on education, but people come away every year and always say the most important part is the networking.
Yep.
And so getting out, you know, you might feel that urge, I got to be up in my room doing emails or putting out a proposal. Put that to the side. Get that done else, you know, before or after. When you're at the forum, definitely unplug, engage, you know, get off your phone and talk to as many people as you can. Get around the trade show. Look at the different technologies. That trade show is full. We have a tech tank that's kind of our version of Shark Tank, but for technology.
Yep.
And how it impacts the different sports. You know, really get involved and ask questions. And don't be afraid. There's plenty of steering committee people to introduce you to people. Let us know if there was somebody, hey, I really wanted to meet X or Y or Z. If we know where they're going to be, there's a lot of people there. So it's always hard to run people down. But, you know, it's always great if you're telling us that you're looking for somebody from Churchill Downs like John Davis,
yep,
or Sarah Contardo. It's like, oh, she's over there. John's over there. And, you know, let's walk you over there and introduce you to them. So, you know, we want you coming back with just an incredible experience. But to a lot of people, they say that going to the forum reminds them why they got into the industry. I mean, this really is a people business, people taking care of people. We have a thing where, you know, we always say friends don't let friends stay unemployed. None of us have players unions or, you know, alumni groups or something out there. So what happens, God forbid, you find yourself on the beach, you know, now being able to have access to so many people that you can pick up and call and say, hey, what's happening in your industry? What's happening in this industry? So, you know, the forum looks after the people. And like I said, friends don't let friends stay unemployed. So we want you to get a chance to meet as many people, take in the different sessions, participate in the social events. This is a very social group, so don't plan to go to bed at 8:30, and not that you would going to Las Vegas, but we're purposely starting everything an hour later in the morning. We figure people are going to need that extra hour of sleep, but we'll go a little bit later in the afternoon instead, and then let people, you know, go to the official bar. So much business gets done in the bar. And so for us, we're going to be at a bar called Losers that's right in the middle of MGM Grand, which is our host hotel.
Yep.
And it's a great spot to get in there and spend some time. You'll be amazed how many deals are getting done in there. You know, people having a couple of Budweisers and just relaxing and just really engaging with each other. I think that's what makes it so special for us.
Terrific. I'm looking forward to it. I do tell people my superpower is the ability to network pretty hard and then turn up the next morning and everyone goes, how are you awake? I'm like, that's what I can do. So for a couple of days, sleep is optional. Or as you know, the Australian Open has just started here in Melbourne, and they're Tennis Australia folk that work around the clock for 2 weeks. They use the phrase, sleep is for the weak. And I sort of take that motto when I'm in a conference because, the late night networking, the early morning networking, the opportunities in the, you know, there's always great content to be learned from the stage, but some of the deeper dive conversations you have around are what the part that I love about conferences. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent. And by the way, I know you have several hours on that airplane going home. You can certainly sleep on the plane ride home.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So I want to finish up with the Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Yes, I do. I'm like I mentioned, I'm from New Hampshire. I'm a huge Boston Red Sox fan. And I remember my dad taking me to opening day at Fenway Park. And I remember just walking through that stadium out into that. And I will never forget just the feeling I had of seeing this massive stadium and getting a chance to watch opening day for the Red Sox. And I want to say it was like 1965.
Yep.
But I was just a little kid. And that was my first event. And I was hooked.
It's a beautiful venue even to this day. Shout out to my good friend Steve Connolly, who put in most of the tech at Fenway Park. You would have been to a lot of sports events in your time. Do you have a favorite food memory at a sports event?
Well, you know, favorite food, this so shows you how pedestrian I am. I'm a sucker for nachos with jalapenos.
Have the full helmet nachos? Is that what you go with?
You know, I'm simple, just the chips, the cheese, and the nacho and the jalapenos, yep. And I'm perfectly fine. I'm easy.
What's the first app you open in the morning?
First app is CBS Sports, just to see what was going on. Yep. I get my CBS Sports fix.
And from a podcast listener point of view, is there someone that you suggest they should follow and why?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Abe Madcor, who is the executive editor of Sports Business Journal and Sports Business Daily. And we're very blessed that Abe comes out and does a session for us every year. He's a terrific, terrific interviewer. But he does a podcast. SBJ has a podcast. They have a couple. One's called First Look every morning. And then Buzzcast is a week long. They kind of talk about the week that was or the week that's happening and what the issues are. And as good as Abe is, I've got to try to convince Abe to – I would love to interview him because he definitely has his finger on the pulse. He's got some strong opinions. It's so great to get to hear his thoughts and ideas, and I highly recommend that to everyone.
Well, I might follow up that and interview him after NSF. What social media platform is your MVP? And you can answer that as yourself or as the NSF.
Well, I tell you what, the one that I'm not, everybody who knows me, anybody who knows me says, what are you doing talking about social media? I'm not a social media geek about it. I follow Instagram and I follow LinkedIn.
Yep.
So those are the two that, you know, you'll pretty much engage with me. But Twitter, Facebook, no, never there. I don't. But those are the two that I'll actually check out.
Okay. Well, other than that, you can check out sportsforum.com to register, sports-forum.com. And in February, 10 to 12 in Vegas, I'm looking forward to catching up there.
Hey, Sean, thank you very much. And like you said, it's sports-forum.com. You got to put that hyphen in there. And we're really looking forward to it. And thank you so much to you and to Sports Geek. Very much looking forward to getting a chance to meet you face-to-face. And getting a chance to hear your session and what you have to talk about. So thank you. Appreciate it. And I hope we'll get a chance to see some people out there that are part and parcel and they got to hear about the forum through the podcast today.
Yep. And I'm looking forward to meeting listeners who have been listening, who are at the forum. I know a few friends of mine already that do go on a regular basis, people like Russell Scabetti and the like. So I'll be catching up with a few familiar faces, but also meeting some new ones. So look forward to seeing you in February.
Hey, thank you so much, Sean. We'll see you then.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following SportsGeek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to digitaltodollars.com.
Thanks again to Ron Seaver from NSF. Send him a tweet at Ron Seaver and tell him that, or tell me if you're going to be there. And because you are a Sports Geek listener and you are back at work and you're probably maybe thinking about going to NSF, well, we're lucky enough to have a special offer for you as a Sports Geek listener. You can go to sportsgeekhq.com/NSF for a special discount. It's a special discount offer for Sports Geek listeners, Sports Geek listeners only. If you're thinking of going, this will be the best price you can find on the internet. So it's only going to be valid for 2 weeks. So go to that link, sportsgeekhq.com/NSF. There'll be instructions there to obtain the special Sports Geek listener discount. As I said in the opener, has not been a feed-up off-season. Has been no off-season at all. As you have been listening, I am now the proud owner of an esports franchise launched in mid-December. We launched the brand and the name, Gravitas. We got the team together, finished recruitment, moved them into the gaming house, set up the gaming house. I've seen more than enough Alan Keys than I want to see for all of 2019. And then last week, we finally set and launched the Gravitas website, gravitas.gg, .gg being the domain of choice in the esports realm, GG meaning good game. So we've got our team up and running. We've had some, the boys have been in practice and preseason mode or scrims where they play practice matches against other OPL teams, and the season opened on Friday. They played a game on a Friday night and they play a game on a Saturday night. And so we opened the season 4 p.m. on Friday. I was up there to support the guys, to make sure that they got up there in one piece, flying to Sydney every week. And they performed absolutely tremendously. They went up against Legacy in our first match, and we won that match to win our very first game. So it's not very often you get to be in a position of firsts. And so there was a lot of firsts last weekend. So getting our first win was pretty important. Then they came up against Mammoth in the second game on Saturday. And Mammoth are a pretty seasoned outfit. And we're probably expected to win. So we are 1-1. And so the journey is just starting. So if you ever want to talk esports and understand what I'm going through, I'll be sharing a fair bit of it on this podcast. But please get in touch. I'm always learning more about the space, how different people operate in the space from a sponsorship media point of view, players. There's a whole bunch of opportunities, I think, in the space that sports can offer. So please get in touch, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or even better, if you're a brand and you want to sponsor esports and get into sponsoring esports, I'd love to talk to you to become a Gravitas sponsor. So that's the update. We're starting to ramp up at digital content and the like. So yeah, keep an eye on things, all things Gravitas. Go to gravitas.gg is where all the content will be being pushed out, and Gravitas OS. OCE on most platforms, Twitter, Instagram, and Gravitas LOL on Facebook. Before I wrap up, some of the things that we're working on at the minute, as discussed, we're going to be doing I'll be doing the Digital to Dollars workshop at National Sports Forum in Las Vegas. I'll be doing the 1 hour format, similar to what I did at SEAT, with some refinement now that I've done it a couple of times with different groups. So it'd be really good to do that with a really commercially focused group, with NSF being really focused on revenue and returns, which is really the focus of Digital to Dollars. So as discussed with Ron, we'll be going through know your audience, know your content, know your distribution, know your value, and know your pitch. It's been a good exercise to do that with Gravitas and build out the pitch deck for Gravitas and the valuation and the rate card for Gravitas using the process. So if you are looking to bring an uplift in your digital activations and sponsorship and digital revenue, please give me a call. It can get your digital strategy aligned and your content plan sorted, but more importantly, drive in more revenue for your team. So digital dollars will continue to be a focus on the sports geek side of the business. And then one thing that always does come up and early in the year as the winter season approaches is athlete digital training. And so I'm setting up some of those sessions now. You know, most of the time it gets set up because of players behaving badly. But sometimes does get it set up to helping players understand how they can build their brand. So I went through this training with my five guys or five players and coaching staff and operations staff at Gravitas to help them understand what the platforms are looking for from athletes, what fans are looking for, what content is going to work, understanding things like privacy and security, and then also not to do the stupid things, so the good, bad, and ugly of social media, and how to stay in control and not let it control you. So again, if you have a playing group or a coaching group that wants to better understand digital and social media, please reach out. You can go to sportsgeekhq.com/social media athlete training if you want some details, but as always, you can send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. That's it for me for this week. If you are listening to this for the first time, thank you very much. If you are listening to this podcast again, and you have been listening from 2014 when I started, please thank you very much. And as always, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callanan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.